We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show once again. I hope you're well. I genuinely mean that. I've had a weird old couple of weeks, to be honest, with the old noggin. You know, you have those days where you just, you know what I mean? You're just like, oh, I don't know, what's the point? You know, but then you have to sort of like, you know, pull yourself together, find some energy somewhere, get yourself up, put the kettle on, and try and get on with your day. What I've found has been helping me. I've been putting on Inner Visions by Stevie Wonder. That's been my album in the morning. I put it on, nice little background. I tell you what, it really helps. So find yourself an album, right, that you like. The nice, easy one in the morning. You don't want to be sticking on, like, Never Mind the Bollocks, you know, Sex Pistols first thing, unless that's how you ease into your day. But I find that Inner Visions, Stevie Wonder, it's a really nice way to get, really sets me up. It's a nice one. Also been doing those sleep stories as well. You know, when you go to bed, put your sleep stories on. It's really, I tell you what, I haven't got to the end of one yet. They really help because, you know what, you lie in bed, existential crisis covers you from head to toe, you know, all the things you worry about. Oh, I shouldn't have said that thing back in 1994. But, you know, we worry about it. I put these sleep stories on. I'm having a great time. Cillian Murphy's on there and Matthew McConaughey's a good one. Yeah, it's really good. You should check it out. They're really cool. Anyway, I'm whittering on here. Before we've got some admin to do, before we get into all that, check out our stylish Insane in the Membrane t-shirts and hoodies from buythatmerch.co.uk. The lads behind SOS Clothing are now branching out and they're doing the merch for bands and podcasters and all sorts, and it's fantastic. So now there's a range of colours. Whereas we had the gold before, we've now got green, red, grey, black. So go and have a look. Go to buythatmerch.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Also, become a Patreon. If you become a Patreon, you get early access to some of our biggest episodes at patreon.com/membrane podcast. This is what we're starting now. We're going to be giving early access to all of our episodes to the Patreons to say thank you for, you know, basically helping us keep the lights on. There's going to be other things coming up as well that we're going to be doing. So watch this space. But yeah, if you want to become a Patreon, go to patreon.com/membrane podcast and come join our gang. Oh yeah, be lovely. Because obviously the money that we get goes back into the podcast, so that's it. It's not about making profits and things like that. We just want to keep doing this great show because you lot love it, we love doing it. So help us continue. Become a Patreon, patreon.com/membrane podcast. Now our guest this week is Mr. Johnny Pelham. I've known Johnny a couple of years, gigged with him quite a few times, lovely fella. I bumped into him recently, actually. I was doing tour support for Clinton Baptiste. I was up around sort of Bolton way, and I went back to the hotel. And I went wandering through. I was at the bar, and it was in this like spa hotel, like in the middle, like, out in the sort of away from Bolton, it was out in the countryside. And Johnny was there with his lovely missus, Sophie Whelan. Sophie Whelan, of course, the mastermind behind the magnificent Alma's Not Normal. And Sophie went off to a do, and Johnny and I sat in a bar and had a proper old chinwag. It's really nice. With that in mind, I'm going to tell you about Johnny. Johnny's got a brand new podcast with the mighty Sean McLaughlin. Sean McLaughlin, of course, a former guest on Insane in the Membrane. And again, one of my favourite comedians. He's special on YouTube, Hail Mary. He's one of the finest shows I've ever seen. Go check that out. This is called Failing Better. They say it's a self-help podcast. But knowing those two, I don't know how much self-help there is from that. But I imagine it's going to be brilliant. And of course, the mighty producer, Paul, is pushing the knobs and the levers in the background there. Good old producer, Paul. So you know it's going to sound great. Those two bumbling clowns clacking their heads together. It's going to be a great podcast. I can't wait to listen to it. So that's brand new podcast with Sean McLaughlin and Johnny Pelham. And it's Failing Better. And I imagine that will be available on all podcast platforms. With that in mind, let's get on with this week's episode. Like I say, Johnny is a brilliant comedian. He's a damn fine human being. I love him very much. Also, with this one, it's a bit of a trigger warning because we do talk about sexual abuse in this one. And I don't want to make too much of a bigger deal of it, but I do need people to know that that is what is in this episode. Johnny was very open about things that have happened to him in his life. And so with that in mind, I need, you know, I don't want anyone to feel, I don't want anyone, you know, if you're listening to this and you unfortunately had something horrible happen to you in your life in that regard, I really want you to know we do talk about that, but in a good way, you know, it's as it is, you know, sometimes it helps to hear other people's stories, I feel anyway, and so hopefully you'll feel the same way. I'm sorry if you've been through this yourself, but yeah, there we are. There's a warning for you, just in case. I don't want anyone getting upset, so there we are. Anyway, it's a fantastic episode. You're going to really like this. Johnny's a brilliant guy. So coming up in a minute is Johnny Pelham.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Insane in the Membrane.
How are you?
Yeah, good, man. How are you? All right?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, just sort of ticking along, really.
I haven't seen you since Bolton. What a nice surprise that was, bumping into you.
Was it Bolton or was it, wasn't it?
Oh, we did Stockport.
Stockport, something like that, yeah. It was a weird gig. It felt like the average age of the audience was about 74, but it actually went surprisingly well.
It was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
That's it. Yeah, we did. I saw you there. Yeah, we were with, what's his name? Ted. Ted Robbins.
Yes. Yeah. He gave me the funny, he introduced me by saying something like, "This next act's a bit unusual." You know, and clearly has watched a video of you and not really understood what was going on.
Yeah. I bet you've never really introduced us that before. Unusual.
No. It was fun, though, because it gives you freedom to be a bit weird on stage because we've already been introduced like that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. You kind of, you've got to play up to it a bit.
Well, the worst one is when they're like, "This next act's going to blow you away." And you're like, "No, let's Let's lower those expectations.
There was one, and it was such a massive introduction. I'm like, I can't live up to that. Fuck's sake. Yeah. I've had it the other way. Toby Foster at The Last Laugh in Sheffield. He basically called me a southern racist Tory paedophile in this big old rambling introduction. And everyone was fine with all the other bits, but they booed Tory. But they were fine with the paedophile bit.
Well, that's good to know, isn't it? If you're ever in Sheffield, get some socialist policies going on. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but do what you want. But yeah, it's you're going on tour, aren't you? That's what's happening.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So going on my first tour, which is very exciting. Mm. It's sort of scary. It's like you just get weekly ticket updates, which is such a hammer blow every time.
Yeah, I hate that.
But I'm really enjoying it, and it's just nice to be able to do it. You know, just people coming to see you rather than just see like a night of comedy because they're on a stag do, and someone else has booked it. You know what I mean? It's just nice.
Yeah.
Thing to try and get going, really.
Well, that's what we all want, I think, as performers. You want people to specifically come to see you, not in an arrogant way. You just want to, like you say, you want to be part of someone's night out, and they've made they like what you do that much, so they want to come and see you on your own.
I think that's right. I think it gives you more freedom maybe to do more stuff that's more uniquely you, you know, because there is when you're doing a Friday, Saturday, weekend club, you know that some people are going to be hammered in there, and that does slightly limit. Obviously, you can still, if you're funny, you can still do whatever you want, but it maybe limits slightly what you can do to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Yeah. Gotta call everyone a cunt ASAP.
Set your stall out early.
Yeah.
Johnny Pelham on the cunt tour.
Yeah.
just go around various towns calling everyone a cunt. You're a cunt. You're right. Because of this. But I remember seeing you, first time I saw you, I can't remember where it was, but I remember watching you, and you were talking about what you'd gone through as like growing up, the various medical things. I can't remember what you called it.
It's probably popliteal pterygium syndrome.
That's probably why I can't remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you did, I'd be freaked out. You were like, well, obviously, I know what you've got because I watched it 4 years ago.
But I remember you doing it, and then you explain what it was, and then you said, and it's quite rare, isn't it? And then you said, any in? And then you went, there never are. It really made me laugh. But all jokes aside, that must have been... It must have been a weird thing to grow up with, or to be born with, even.
You know what? I think it was like, you don't know it's weird when it's happening to you somehow. Does that make sense? So
And when I say weird, I mean like, because it's rare and it's an unusual thing.
Yeah, totally. I totally get it. And so a lot of the surgery happened when I was like pre-cognitive, so like a year and under.
Mm.
And then when I was like seven... When I was like seven or eight, year two, whatever year two is in, I don't know what year it is, but they'd stretch you. Basically, I had webbing behind the back of my legs, so they had to like cut it. But for some reason, they couldn't do it in like one fell swoop. So every 2 weeks, they'd have to like cut it a bit more and stretch it. And so I was in a wheelchair for about 6 months. And I think that was a weird experience. You know what I mean? Because it's like you are like distanced from everyone else who's just running around and doing stuff. But at the time, I didn't mind it really. You know what I mean? Like it definitely didn't feel like, oh, this is bad. It was just like, you just get on with it, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose if you don't know, you don't know any difference, so.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your reality. That's just like, oh, this is what I'm doing, I guess.
Sure, yeah, I think so. And I think it definitely informs my comedy, I think, about being a bit of an outsider looking into the world going like, how does this work? You know, because you have that natural distance. And also, you know, I went to a pretty much all Asian school. I was the only white boy in my class. So I think throughout my life, I've been like slightly on the outside of things. Never like meanly. So I've always been like, I never really got bullied or anything, but like just... clearly not quite fitting in, which is actually quite a helpful space to do comedy from, really.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's quite unusual. It was because it's only unusual for me because I grew up where I grew up was like we had. I mean, my friend Arahan Danji was the only guy, like the only Asian guy that was in our class from Pakistan. And so it was very unusual. But again, you know, he didn't get bullied a lot for that. And like you say, you don't know any different. It's just how it is. So it doesn't.
I think it was only at uni when I was like, you mean you weren't in a gang full of Bangladeshi people?
Mm.
I realised how, because also no one drank really. So everyone had smoked weed. So he used to smoke a fair bit of weed.
Yeah.
But no one would. No one would drink. So then when I went to university, it was like suddenly there was a whole new culture of like binge drinking and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I quickly caught up, but I had to learn how to do that, really.
Yeah, right, of course. And with having the operations when you were so young, obviously you don't remember much of it, but were there ongoing complications that you had to keep going back and having operations?
Well, my legs, so the main one were my legs, so I still can't, like, put my feet flat on the ground.
Mm.
So I still can't fully stretch my legs and straighten my legs, which is... So, and just recently, my ankle has been, like, killing me.
Mm.
And every now and then it just goes, basically. I'm sort of struggle to walk. And I remember being about 20 and going to speak to a doctor about it. And he was like, basically, well, you just walk in a really inefficient way and you're probably going to get arthritis. And I was like, is there anything I can do about that? And he was like, no. And I remember at the time finding it really funny how shit the doctor was. Like, because he just didn't even try to have a solution. He was just like, you just walk weird. And then, so I've always sort of held that as like a really funny thing. But then recently, I have been thinking, shit, I need to actually sort it out. And I feel like, weirdly, Rich, actually, like, I've sort of started realising I'm more disabled than I've ever considered recently. Because, right, like, okay. I feel like when you're, like, I did things like, you know, I used to play football all the time, I climbed Kilimanjaro.
Oh, wow.
Like, so it was never like, and I'd never say I was disabled, really, unless, like, I might say, you know, but it never really affected my life.
Mm.
Then actually, I'm often just in pain, but just, like, haven't acknowledged it, if that makes sense. And so, like, and I think there was such a desire to be like, right, I'm not going to let this determine anything. I'm going to do everything I should want to be able to do. That I, like, just shut out how much it has impacted me, really.
Yeah, I know. It's not exactly what you mean. It's that your brain just processes it and goes, yeah, just... I suppose because you know it's just... you've, like the doctor said, it's just going to be part of what you are, what you do. So your body, your brain processes it and goes, well, that's just part of us. So let's make it as manageable as possible.
I think, and you don't want to like impose self-limiting beliefs on yourself.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So you don't want to be like, well, I can't do things normal people can do because of this. But maybe my way of dealing it was like too far the other way just to not even acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Rather than be like, how can I manage? Like now I'm trying to more be like, how can I manage it? What do I need to do? Do I need to go to physio? Do I need to take back? Like... I think that's a healthier way than me, which was just to sort of pretend it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And then not really, like, feel the pain or whatever.
Yeah, just block it out with and fling yourself up mountains and that. I mean, it's not even Snowden.
Yeah. Well, I always feel like Mount Kilimanjaro's funnily, like, it's not a killer mountain. It's just you just have to walk for a while.
Yeah.
Like, there's no scrambling up. I mean, I'm sure you can do it that way if you go up like the face of the mountain or whatever.
Yeah.
But we just casually walk to the top and everyone's like, what's funny about it is everyone's like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And there's like a Tanzanian man carrying like 4 Westerners bags up the hill in like flip-flops, not giving a shit. And everyone in the West is like, God, I've never been challenged so much as this day.
And the fact, as soon as you said, oh yeah, I climbed Kilimanjaro, I was like, what the fuck? And now you're we just went up the back way.
Yeah. I think all it really is if you get like travel sickness or whatever, it's not altitude sickness, then you're pretty fucked. Like you just can't do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't get altitude sickness, you're sort of fine. Like I think it's just like whether or not you get ill, really.
Mm. And is there, like you were saying, you know, like taking better care of yourself and things like that. Are you, will it get worse as you get older, do you think? And then you're going to have to really start doing like exercise, like yoga or something else. Is there anything you can do to sort of counteract it?
I honestly, I mean, this I don't know is the honest answer. I guess it's like it's what I do for sure is like, because at the moment it'll go and it'll unexpectedly go and then I'll have to like hobble around for a day and then it'll come back. And when it's hobbling around, I'm like, shit, this is serious. Mm. And then it'll just go back to normal and it won't be any pain. And then I'll just forget about it. So at the moment, it's stupid how I'm dealing with it. But I honestly don't know. Basically, if you like, I walk on my tiptoe, so I push off from my like toes. Mm. So if you think about like using a hinge in that way, it's just really, it's such a poor distribution of weight because all the weight goes through my ankle.
Yeah.
To like push off from. So it's just like, it's just not how you're meant to walk, really. No. So, so fuck knows is the answer to that.
We'll just see what happens.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But that's it. I mean, does it cause problems elsewhere in the body? Because I know I fucked my back a few years ago and I didn't deal with it. And what I was doing was I was kind of like overcompensating the rest of the other side of my back. And it kind of, now I've got this like little curvature where the damage is. And you don't realise you're doing it, but every now and again I'll forget and then my back goes again. And then I start getting pain in my hips when I'm driving because I realise I'm sitting a certain way. Is that the same? Do you have like, is it other places we go, why is my elbow hurting now? You know, because it's, you're doing
something. I'm sure that is too, like, I went to physio for a bit when I was a teenager. And if like, it was always that, isn't it? It's like if my back was hurting, be like, oh yeah, that's your ankle. Yeah. Or like your neck had been, he'd be like, oh, your left thigh. And you're like, what? You know what I mean? It's like wherever you were in pain, you'd start on like the opposite side of the body and just start whacking that. But it is like, you really see how like the body as a whole, you know, like when you go, I think when you go through like surgery and stuff, it's like they discreetly isolate like your arm or whatever, and then they like fuck around with your arm. But whenever you go to a physio, you really see how like holistic we are. Because it will always be like that, won't it? Where it's like, yeah, your ankle's in pain, so you need to sort out your elbow, sort of thing.
Yeah, I remember I was having my foot massaged, as it was really hurting in a particular place, and then they were rubbing it, and they went, "Oh yeah, it's all crunchy in that area, because you're dehydrated." What are you talking about? It's in my foot, and they went, "Yeah, no, that's because now your feet hurt because you're not drinking enough water."
That's one. I've recently started like improving my diet a bit and like drinking water, and holy shit, my brain works better.
Crazy, isn't it?
Like it's like I'm charged with a different battery. Just because, and then you feel like, of course it is. Like if you ever do like, you know, something like, I was going to use the example of drugs, but let's just say, like, I've done drugs, so I'm just going to say it. Fuck you, the police. But like, you do like, you know, a tiny bit of drugs and your whole personality completely changes.
Yeah.
And it's like, of course, when you think about the shit we're pumping into our body, that's going to have like an impact on our brain and, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy it took me so long to work it out, I think.
I'm 50 and it took me till now to go, oh yeah, I've got brain fog because I don't drink water for weeks on end.
Water's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you start drinking water. Like, if I'm tired now, I'll just drink water and I'll be like, all right, yeah, I'm not that tired anymore. I just haven't drank water for 7 days. That's why I'm knackered.
I'm sitting here now, I'm like, it's really hot. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've not drank any water all day. Yeah. Idiot. Absolute idiot. But it obviously, you're obviously the kind of person that, you, rather than, you know, some people, the things that have happened to you would have kind of stop them doing certain things, but you've obviously, your personality pushes you to go in the opposite direction, to go, no, fuck it, like you said, I'm going to do that instead. No, I'm not going to just sit here and put up with this. I'm going to climb a mountain. I'm going to do comedy.
I think so, yeah. I think how I dealt, I think a lot of that is like, what is that? Like I think a lot of my 20s has been realizing that like I had quite a difficult childhood.
Okay.
So a lot, not even like, so in my show that I'm doing, I talk about childhood sexual abuse, which sounds really heavy, but I that happened, and the surgery. And I feel like how I dealt with that was just to dissociate and go numb. And so it wasn't like, I wasn't like really aware of it. And then it took me to like be like 25, 26 to go, oh, like, I'm not really dealing with quite a lot of shit. You know what I mean? But it was like, but it definitely wasn't a way of going, It was just my way of dealing with it, was just not to think about it and to avoid it, I guess.
Mm. And when that was happening to you, was it again a case of, did you know it was a horrible thing that was happening, or did you just kind of go, well, because you trust the adults when you're a kid, so you kind of, I don't know, it's a weird experience.
I think the guy who did it was like an older teenager,
right?
So he wasn't like I sometimes wish he'd be like an old pervy man. Mm. You know what I mean? Because it would have been less complicated. And I guess I think one of the things that I've always wondered is like, did I experience it as abuse at the time? Because what my like story about myself is that like I have had the surgery, like quite a lot, you know, every 2 weeks having surgery, and then I sort of learned to dissociate through that.
Yeah.
So like, because obviously my body was in a lot of pain, so I thought, fuck feeling pain, I'm just going to get into my head and not feel it. And I think I definitely did that when the abuse was happening as well. So it's like, I can't remember how it began. I can't remember how it like ended. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't really, there's so many like details I don't really have about it.
You think you've blocked them out?
Totally, yeah. And like, I've talked about it a lot in therapy, and I just can't retrieve them. You know what I mean? So it's like, and in a way, like, I spent a while really wanting to get like information, like how did it begin? What did I feel like when it was happening? And then I've sort of just thought, fuck, try to work that out. You know, like in a way, like it's not that helpful. And also I just can't do it. Like I just can't get access to it. So why spend ages trying to do that?
Yeah. I think that's it. At least you, later on, you acknowledged that something awful had happened to you.
I think so, yeah. And then like, and that was very helpful because I do feel like as soon as you admit it, then you can start like other bits of your life make sense. Like I've never been in a sexual relationship afterwards. And it's clearly because I was like scared or like touching people made me anxious. I didn't really want to do it. Like I hate hugging people in green rooms or anything like that. You know, it was never something I wanted to do. But always, I never connected the two. And I definitely was never walking around thinking like, God, this awful thing happened to me. And it was just in therapy. I just talked and I was like, I really went to therapy because I was like, I don't know why I'm not like sexually active and I'm 25.
Mm.
That was the main reason I went. And then so it wasn't to go talk about the abuse, and the abuse just came out organically quite early on, obviously.
Yeah.
And then it was like being like, oh, I think it probably is that. And then, yeah, just working out that really.
Yeah. When you sort of thought about it, did you feel shame? Did you feel embarrassed talking about it? Or you kind of, was it just kind of like more matter of fact? As you just said, you were talking about it as if it was like, oh, this thing happened. And they're like, hang on a minute. Yeah, that's abuse.
It was more matter of fact for sure, I think. And I'm sure like, there must have been some shame or something that stopped me telling my parents, say, about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like telling anyone about it, really. So there must have been something that in me that knew it was fucked. Mm. But I think what you do is you just normalise. And I didn't think about it ever. So it wasn't like something I'd be thinking about every day. It was just something that I just wouldn't really think about it. And so then, I guess, it was very much like, oh, I did have, and when I first talked about it, I described it as a thing we did together.
Yeah.
So like, and it was my therapist who was like, you know, whether or not the guy intentionally abused you, manipulated you and was a monster, or whether he was just like, whatever happened in that time, it was an abusive thing because you were like 8 and he was like 15.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that, and then I still feel like sometimes I don't have that, like intellectually I'm completely aware of that, but I've still never like cried like that. Like I think because I dissociated from the surgery, I just don't have any access to like how I felt. So I've never cried about it or never I don't even feel that angry about it somehow. So the part of me thinks I need to go back to therapy and, like, figure it all out. You know what I mean? Like it still isn't properly resolved. But another part of me just can't be arsed.
Well, I think that's it, isn't it? You kind of don't want to, if it's not getting in the way of anything, like if you're able to sort of live your life and, like you say, you're disassociated from it, you're kind of like, oh, that was a thing that happened. I've talked about it already. That kind of, that takes some of the pressure off. So it's out there. So it's out of your head. But I think, yeah, at some point, maybe, you know, maybe not now, but at some point, go and have a chat with someone again.
Yeah, I think I'll go back. I think the hard thing is, so I did EMDR. Have you ever done EMDR?
No.
It's some like weird therapy, which no one quite understands how it works, but it's really good for processing trauma, which is basically, I guess someone, I was just thinking, someone on the podcast might be like, we do know how it works, but as far as I can tell, there's a lot of different theories about why it works. But basically, it's like rapid eye movement therapy or something. And basically, you just follow someone, you like relive the memory, and then you like say how it makes you feel. So it might make you feel like eight anxious,
yeah,
or whatever. And then you like, you play it. Oh, fuck, I forgot how you do it, really. You know, like if we're in the pub now, Rich, I'd really be confidently telling you this thing. But when it's on a podcast, you think someone's definitely going to be like, well, actually, I've done that therapy. And what he said isn't correct.
But it might be their version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But basically, you just like, you follow someone's like finger as they like talk, as you talk, as you think about the event.
Mm.
And then you try and like learn to feel okay about it. And then that like processes the trauma. I mean, that was a terrible description. But if anyone listening to this suffers from trauma, definitely worth checking out EMDR, because it's got insane high levels of success. But I did it and realised that I didn't have access to the initial memories enough to be able to get to it. So then it was like, should we go to the surgery? Because that's probably where you learn to dissociate. And I just thought, going back again.
Keep going back about sure there's something you can connect to.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
I left it then.
Yeah, I think that's it. Once you've disconnected, I guess it is difficult to connect again.
You know? I think that's what my 20s have been a lot about, is like trying to like connect to myself. Because obviously the problem with numbing is that it was great, you know, so like it was great for climbing Kilimanjaro because I was probably in a lot of pain but not really feeling it.
Yeah.
But then it's shit when you're trying to like feel happy or joy. You know what I mean? So it's like the cost of numbing is that you don't get the joyful sides of life somehow.
Yeah, you just numb to everything.
Totally. And so that's for sure what I was like for like most of my life, really. At least certainly into my late 20s. And even now, it's definitely an issue I have.
And is it, because, you know, you're in a relationship, and has it affected relationships, this sort of being closed off?
I think so. I guess the benefit of it is I'm like quite like calm.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, so like, and I guess the negative of it is like, so for instance, like my partner Sophie, I've got terrible with memories. So like my partner will often be like, or do you remember the first date we had? And I don't have any clue whatsoever. Or like, you know, like, so like, memories don't stick in my head for whatever reason. So like, and the amount of times she'll tell me things I've said, it like sounds like a real sort of old school comics thing about like, you know what women are like, storing away arguments from, but I don't have, like, it's such an unfair advantage she has, because I have no memory what I've said of like a day ago. And she's like, well, you said this and this and this. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't just scream you a cunt for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way this is the full narrative. I'm going to call fake news on this.
Just out of the blue, just nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. What's that? I think what I've found, because I've recently had therapy, because there's a few things I needed to sort of iron out and discuss, and it did me a world of good. It really did. It did sort me out. And what I've found now, I am a lot more calm. And again, I think it's to do with chemistry as well. You know, you're a different person with different people. And I think now, having been, I had quite a volatile relationship, I'm so chilled out.
Mm.
I get people going, do you give a fuck? And I'm like, yeah, I do give a fuck.
Yeah.
I just don't want to fight about it. I just, whatever, I'm happy with whatever you want to do. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine. Just, do you find that? You're like, no, I'm fine. Just,
I think, like, again, yes, for sure. Maybe it's a fault where it's like, she'll be like, what do you want to do? And I'll be like, I don't give a crap. Or like, with like, she's decorating the house at the moment. And I just don't care. Like if it's yellow or blue. But like, but also that is quite an annoying position to put her in where she has to make all the decisions. Or like, even like, stuff in our house. Like, I don't care about, like, there's not a painting I like. Or like, if it was me, the walls would just be bare and like dirty. You know what I mean? Like I just wouldn't give a shit about them. So it's like, it's in a way like I can understand her being like, well, can I get your opinion? But my genuine opinion is I just couldn't give a shit about things like that, really.
And I mean, so, at least that in all areas, all aspects of your life, you're kind of like, I don't care. Like, you know, do you look at the walls and go, actually, I'd like them to be blue? Or is this something that just doesn't occur
to you? I think that's my big issue, is not caring. So I think that is a big issue. It's like, you know, like my clothes or like my hair. Like my hair just grows long and then eventually I cut it because I'm like, I should probably get this cut because, you know, people are pointing and staring. Or like, you know, my clothes will have like holes in them. And like, I just want, and it's like, so there's definitely like a lack of care about myself. And so I think one of the things I've been trying to do, because like when I was like living in London, I lived in like this, you know, like that weird comedian squat house. Had like Tim Renk and Bobby Mair lived there for a bit with Harriet Kemsley and people like that.
Is that the one in Finsbury Park that way over?
No, it was another one in Streatham, but it was just like a shithole, really. And,
Yes, I do know the one you mean, yeah.
And it was like, you know, and it was really fun, but like, that wasn't, I was fine there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a lot of people are like, how could you possibly live here? And I'm like, to be honest, this is absolutely wonderful.
Just didn't give a shit.
I think one of the things I've been trying to do in like recently is trying to like care more, but then it's quite hard because you're trying to like force an emotion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's hard to know. It's hard to figure out how to give a shit about stuff you don't care about, even if you know caring about it would probably make you happier in some way.
Well, I don't know if it would make. This thing is that if you, like, for instance, with clothing, I really love clothing, and it's something it's just something I'm into.
Mm.
And I've got a couple of mates of mine. There's a couple of comedians as well that, you know, I'll go to gigs and they'll go like, oh, I always like what you're wearing, Rich. I'm like, nice one. And they're just like, I don't give a fuck about what I wear. It's literally just to stop me getting arrested. I don't give a shit. Like Carey Marks said, he's got his whole bit about, he's just bought like 100 pairs of black socks.
Yeah, I've
so
seen
he
that.
Never has to worry about pairing them.
Yeah. What I always think about that is like, it's like, so I, like, not having sex wasn't like a big issue for me. I wasn't really that arsed about it.
Mm.
And then I started doing it. I was like, oh, this is class. And so,
did you say that halfway through?
Yeah.
This is class.
What I said the first time I came was, I said, this is class. We should continue doing this. But so there's a part of me that wonders, like, if I started giving a shit, I would, like, if it would have its own momentum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because if I think that, like, my lack of caring about clothes is related to a disassociative practice that kept me safe but is no longer needed, and actually it would be nice to care about clothes, then I just need to, like, start buying some clothes, seeing what I like, seeing what I don't like, and it'll be something I care about and I'll have meaning.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that thinks that, and then again, there's another part of me that thinks, oh, who gives a shit, fuck it. It's very hard to know, isn't it? Like, what is... I think we've got too much choice in the West. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like, and it's like, I think I'd be happy in a cult. You know, just a cult which just said, like, look, this is what you do, and then you go to heaven. I'd be like, great.
You only have to wear these clothes for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And just some certainty about what is the right way to go about life. I'd love that.
Just a fuss-free existence.
Yeah. And like, I'm jealous of religious people where they're like, well, I've just got to follow these 10 rules and then I go to heaven.
Yeah.
And I think, God, that must take the stress out of life quite a lot.
That's it. It's just nothing else to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't have to covet another man's ox and I'm going to heaven.
But is there anything that you are passionate about? There must be something that you get excited about, that you get fired up. You're like, ah, this is the fucking one. And I don't mean when you're having sex. This is class.
Class. What is it? You know, like, I guess that, like, there's nothing that, like, I think what it is, like, so I always have to make my, so, like, now I'm starting to do things like meditation and things like that. And I it still feels like I'm, like, with this torso, I know I'd probably be happy if it sold well.
Yeah.
But on a day-to-day basis, I sort of, I have to tell myself I need to give a shit about this. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it doesn't come from, like, internally, I'm like a deep drive and that I need to sell out this tour, or I need to, you know, look good, or I need, like, there's no, like, I don't really have passion, really. It's like, I just think, oh, I probably should care about that. And then I try and, like, but it's, I think what I'd love to get to a stage where it was coming organically from how I felt, whereas at the moment it still feels like I'm telling myself I should do that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, you're telling yourself to give a shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't really, like, even when I did Apollo, like, afterwards I just thought that was fine, but there wasn't, like, you know, it wasn't like, it was no sense of me being like, this is a pinnacle of my career, I'm really happy. Really? I just walked off and went, that was pretty fun. And it was a bit crushing, actually, because I sort of thought it would be amazing. And then I did it, and I didn't even really care about it. Afterwards.
Really? What about the run-up to it?
You know what? Like, I there was, like, because it was an hour show. It was the show I'm going on tour, and then I'd, like, had to, like, minimise it into a 20-minute set. So I guess there was, like, you're probably right, there was a care to make it good, or to, like, work out the mechanics of how to turn it into a 20-minute set as opposed to an hour. So that was, like, and there was, like, I did want it to be good. You know, so there was, like, a drive to be, like, right, let's make this work. But I guess that maybe that is, like, passion, because it was there, but it feels more like, maybe it's like the technical challenge of it almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I like comedy a lot, because I like figuring out how to make something funny that, you know, probably isn't that funny.
What got you into comedy then? How did this happen? Were you passionate about it?
No, I honestly was at uni and I was like, I was standing up to Freshers Week, and you know, like, I don't know if you went to uni, but I just signed up to everything. You know, I was like parachuting, stand-up comedy. And then I tell you what stand-up did for me, though. It was the first thing I was good at, because that was quite weird. You know, like, I've got a few sort of disabilities, as we've mentioned. I was in an all-Asian gang. Like, I just talked about my life and I instantly had a point of view, which is what, like, you sort of need as a comic. Yeah. But without having any skill, or, you know, but, like, without knowing it, I already had a sort of weird angle on the world. And so, and what was amazing about comedy was doing well felt amazing. I remember that feeling, actually, of, like, being good at comedy.
Yeah.
It, at uni, particularly when it's like, you know, I didn't really fit in probably. Like, there's a clip of my, like, Chortle Student Comedy Awards from, like, 2012. And I literally just rock back and forth. And I'm like, such an odd-looking man. And it's like, that was, but that really worked, you know, to get that, like, first 5 minutes. All you need is that, like, to be something. Yeah. And you can tag your jokes onto it and you're fine. So that felt amazing. That, like, when comedy was amazing for me, to be like, oh, shit, I'm actually quite good at this and it feels great.
Yeah. And it was, do you still get the same buzz from it? Well, like you've just said, you've done Apollo and you went, that was all right.
I definitely feel I remember, like, doing, you know, like, rowdy club gigs. I remember the first time I did them and felt, like, that felt real amazing, because I was, like, this weird guy who could go in and control a room of, like, 200 people who were hammered, and it worked, my sort of slightly odd comedy, and that felt amazing. But I do. I definitely feel like I'm at the moment. I'm not getting as much enjoyment from it as I was, like, you know, 6 years ago. Mm. Say, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get phases of that where I'm just. I had it recently. I'm like, oh, what am I doing? I mean, I was stood on the platform in the middle of nowhere. It was like a Sunday morning, and I had to wait an hour for the train because they're only like, it's Sunday. And I just sort of sat there, and I'm like, fucking hell.
It's always writing new jokes, isn't it?
Yes.
That's always the answer, is to go, oh, I'm just so bored of my set.
Yeah.
And that's why, and I think when a set becomes like a script that you're just like dead, yeah, you're walking on there. And also when jokes, I think, are like out of tune with how you feel about yourself now, particularly me, like I just tend to write stuff about myself because I'm a narcissist. But when you're like going on writing jokes that don't feel relevant to you anymore, they're sort of just like dead. You know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean. You're a different person from when you wrote those jokes.
Totally. And then you feel like you have to act. Like you're going on stage thinking, how would this sort of character that I'm now writing for, who was me 3 years ago, deliver this joke about whatever?
Yeah. But there are things that I now talk about in my act that I'm really, I thought I'd never talk about, like stories that have happened, things that have happened to me. Like last night I did a new material night, and I said at the beginning, I went, look, these are literally just thoughts I've just had today.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to tell you them now. There is no punchlines attached to these. I'm just going to say the thing. And I told a story that I've never told before, and it got some laughs, but I was like, fuck, I never thought I'd have the confidence to talk about that.
Do you know what's changed?
No. Well, I'll tell you what, actually, I will say, when I started talking about a certain, I got a bit about a gay saunas to work in. That was from watching Sophie.
Oh, really?
Soho Theatre, and I've told her that. I remember her talking about some stuff that happened to her when she was a child, and talking about sex work and things like that. And I went, oh, that's I'm going to tell this story. And I told the story. And everyone, because that was it. I was watching Sophie, and she's telling quite harrowing things, but she was doing it in such a way the whole of the theatre was just bent double, laughing their heads off. And I'm like, oh my fucking god, that is a skill. Yeah. And it really fired me up. So I think it was that was quite a pivotal moment for me. And you know,
that's really exciting. It is. I mean, it is funny that me and Sophie go out, because we both do like Sophie Willen, who did Alma's Not Normal, and also shows about, and me, and it, sometimes I'll be writing in my thing, and she'll be writing in her thing, and she's writing about something awful, and I'm writing something awful. We just sit down knackered, both reliving past trauma.
Yeah, I mean, do you find it? Is there a comfort with the pair of you that you can talk about these things with each other? Do you find, or do you talk about these things with each other, or you kind of go, look.
We talk about work a fair bit, just because it's so much easier. Like, she helped me with this Edinburgh show that's going on tour. Sorry, not Edinburgh show, now the tour show that initially was in Edinburgh. Helped me with that. And I helped a bit with Alma. I was script consultant on that. So we definitely help each other, but I think it's just because we're very in tune with each other and we spend a lot of time with each other. So naturally, you just... And rather than, like, email, you know, a script editor or script consultant or whatever, and then they spend a day getting back to you, and then you have to, it's just sometimes easy just to go into the kitchen and have a 20-minute chat about it. And normally the other person isn't even, it's just like a voice for the other person to work it out. You know what I mean? That's normally how it is, but it can be very helpful that we can just, I'd love to write something with her in the future, just because it would be a lot easier.
Well, yeah, this is it. But, I mean, with regards to the traumatic things that have happened to the pair of you in your lives, is there a comfort in that kind of, you know, you're with someone that can understand what you've been through and vice versa? You know, you might not necessarily talk about it all the time, but... You know.
Yeah, and not consciously, but I'm sure... that's definitely in there, in the mix of, like, a helpful thing. I'm sure that is something that's helpful for both of us, even though, Yeah, like you said, we've never consciously had that conversation, I don't think, where we've been like, you know, it's really helpful you've had this trauma.
Oh, I'm so pleased that happened to you.
God, that sounds awful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank God. Oh. I guess, like you say, on a subconscious level, you kind of just...
I think so. And also, like you say, because sometimes when you, like, when, you know, if I tell someone about the abuse, sometimes people freak out and then you have to manage their expectation and manage their... you know, them freaking out about it.
Yeah.
And in a way that can be quite exhausting. And it's not their fault because, you know, they're entitled to have their opinion. And if they care for me, you know, it's very sad news for them that I was abused or whatever. But it does mean that you spend a lot of time sort of managing other people's feelings around it, which means often you can't fully express how it felt because you don't want them to, you know, like, so something I've been thinking about in the show I'm touring now is, I talk a lot about how I'm fine with it now. And I definitely feel like a lot of that is probably not, it's not true, but it's overly simplistic.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that was because I didn't want I knew I needed the audience to be relaxed. Yeah. Well, not relaxed, but, you know, I didn't want them, because obviously if I wasn't okay, I wouldn't be able to do a comedy show about it.
No.
But I kept reminding them I was okay, I think as a way to go, you don't have to freak out. When, you know, it is probably overly simplistic to say I'm fine now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's funny, when having done this podcast for a couple of years now, because I'm not a trained, you know, I'm not a trained counsellor, and this isn't a counselling session, but things like that come up. And so when you mentioned it earlier, you've got to find a way of, because you don't want to go, oh my God, ah, fuck. Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I want this space to, when you be able to talk about that thing comfortably. And so it's working out those skills to kind of go, oh, mate, shit, okay. And sometimes I get it wrong. Sometimes I'm a bit clunky. I'll just go, so what? Ah, fuck. Well, all right.
Yeah. But it is hard. Like, my friend got cancer. You know, my friend my age, like a 30-year-old guy, got cancer. And it's so fucking hard to, like, and we have a very, like, jokey relationship. Like, so our relationship is built on taking the piss out of each other, really.
Yeah.
And so it's like, then do you go in and go, hey, you got cancer, you dickhead? Like, would that be good? Or like, is that insane? Or like, then you don't want to have like this sort of solemn chat with your mate who you've never really chatted to. So it's like, it is hard to work out how you talk about something that's like difficult in a way that doesn't like trivialize it, but also doesn't turn it into this like overly sentimental thing. You know what I mean?
It's
difficult, isn't it?
I know exactly what you mean. Close mate of mine has been having some real issues with his mental health, and to the point he talked about ending his life. And we've known each other years, and so I got a message from him saying, "Look, I really want to meet up." And he never does that.
Yeah,
he said, "I want to meet up. I'm having real troubles." And he's always the one that, like, he left school, good education, got a brilliant job, has always worked where he's worked. You know, like, he did things how, you know, society says you should do them. And even he was struggling with it, and I had no idea until he said, "I want to meet up. We need to meet up." And we met up, we had a big chat. We walked around this place, and he was telling me all about it. And he was talking about the thoughts of suicide and how he didn't want to be here anymore and all this. And we had a huge chat. And so we said, "Right, we're going to make this a regular thing. Every couple of weeks, we're going to meet up. We're going to go out, and we're going to have a coffee, and we're going to chat shit." And then there was one time he said, "I'm on my way." And he said, "I'm getting this train. I'll be into London Bridge at this time." And I'm like, "Cool." And then, so like half an hour, 40 minutes later, he still wasn't there, and he wasn't answering his phone. And I'm like, "Oh fuck! Don't. Well, okay. I hope he's all right. I'm sure he's fine." And he was. He arrived eventually, and I just went, "I went, you fucking dickhead! I thought you'd thrown yourself under the fucking train." And I'm standing here like a lemon, and we had a laugh about it. But
yeah,
you have to find a way of doing it that addresses the elephant in the room, but at the same time, you don't want to look too glib.
That's it. You never want to be flippant, do you?
Yeah. Also,
I mean, that's one of the things about the show, why I wanted to do it, actually, was like, because I felt like, you know, the only time we ever talk about, like, child sexual abuse, it's in such bleak terms. And, you know, like, it's always like, he was abused as a child, that's why he murdered everyone in the school. And it's like, there is such an idea that you're sort of irrevocably fucked if it's happened to you. And it isn't I don't think it's true. Like, obviously, it's a devastating thing that will have lifetime impact, probably, and you don't want to be flippant about that, and you don't want to minimise it. But also, I don't think it's this, like, life sentence where you're unable to live a happy, joyful life after it's happened to you. And I do think it's something... It's so important to talk about, because the numbers on it are crazy, Rich, man. Like, obviously, like, accurate stats are hard to get because, you know, no one wants to talk about it. But, like, some people say, like, 1 in 6, some people say 1 in 10, some people say 1 in 20 children are sexually abused in the country.
Oh, my God.
But, like, whatever number, it's, like, tens, hundreds of thousands. Mm. And yet, if you talk about it, people freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, like, so that was a big part of, like, wanting to talk about it, was being like, actually, this is an issue we need to get. Just find a way to discuss. Mm. And what I was like, when I did Apollo, one of the things I thought was, if someone could just turn to the mate and go, holy shit, that happened to me.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. You know, that would be like, that would be the reward of the doing it, really. Just to like, because there's another stat which is crazy, which it takes people 22 years on average from the time they abuse to tell anyone about it.
Oh my God.
And you think about, like, all that silence and that shame and that guilt that you, like, internalise and freak out with. Yeah. And actually, if we could just find a way to go, oh, yeah, that, you know, like, yeah, just find a way to have that conversation, it would change lives for sure, really.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just, like, these are things that, like you say, because it's not discussed, you don't know. You don't know these.
100%, 100%. Yeah. And then, like, what's weird is, like, since I've started talking about it, I've got some bleak messages in my inbox, Rich.
Oh, really?
People just sending me stuff. And it's a sort of privilege, you know, to get those messages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also it can be a bit like you say, I'm not a trained therapist, so I don't really know how to help particularly. Mm. But I'm definitely glad to have, you know, sort of nudged the conversation slightly in a way that hopefully lets people talk about it more.
Well, I think that's why I love doing this. Because what's happened, like you've just said, I get messages from people all the time.
Hmm.
And yeah, I'm not a trained counsellor, but it's nice to be somebody or be something that people can at least get the things out of their body.
Hmm.
You know, it might, because that's half the battle is actually saying it or telling someone. And that's why, yeah, I don't know if I can do much with it, but just by being someone that someone feels they can reach out to, I think is quite a privilege, like you said.
And it's huge, because as long as you respond with empathy and kindness, you don't need, like, the technical skills massively to know, like, the best thing to do, but just allowing that, giving them a space to say it and have that, like, validated and listened to and will be massive for so many people.
Yeah.
Because, when I started talking, it was only when I started talking about it that I could start, like, looking at it and realising the impact it had and start unpicking that.
Yeah.
Whereas before you talk about it, you're just subject to your coping strategy or your defence mechanism or whatever it is. And then as soon as you start talking about it, you can go, holy fuck, I do that because of that. And so if I change that, that might change and my life might get better and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I think it's an amazing podcast you do, because I think it's such a area that needs light thrown on it, you know. So it seems like such a brilliant podcast that
Thanks,
you do,
mate. Well, it's just, I mean, it's things like that, like, and like you saying things like, just because that's happened to you doesn't mean that you're now going to have an unfulfilled life, or you're now going to be so damaged that you can't live a life. I know some people that, you know, as it's been so devastating that they haven't been able to pick themselves up, and that's no reflection on them as people. It's just, what, you know, it was such a huge thing that happened to them. But knowing that it doesn't have to define who you are. There's someone else that I knew that had that. She had a horrible thing happen to her when she was a child. And I remember her saying to me, like, look, it doesn't define who I am. Mm. It happened. I've dealt with it. It's affected me.
Mm.
But it's not, I'm not a victim of abuse. It's just a thing that happened.
Mm. And I think, like, it is that thing of some... there also being some hopeful stories, you know, because like you, the amount of, you know, the amount of true crime series you watch where it's like a serial killer and then it's like, well, the reason given was he was abused. And I'm sure being sexually abused will have huge, well, does have hugely detrimental effects, and it, you know, might make you struggle to exist in society and will affect people's mental health. But that's not all, that's not, you know, what's the word I'm after? That isn't completely causal. Like, it's not like if you abuse, you're going to be a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
for the vast, vast majority of people, they do go on to live happy, normal lives, I think. Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know what you mean. It's such a... It, like, those numbers are so... Well, they're shocking, because you just... I've every woman I've ever spoken to has had something... has been sexually abused in some way, shape or form. And you're like, it blows my mind that's happened on that scale.
I couldn't agree. I found like the Me Too movement was so shocking to me because the scale was overwhelming. Like, every, like you said, every woman I talked to would be like, yeah, I've got experiences like this.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to sound like a great guy, but I couldn't fucking believe it. You know what I mean? Like some of the shit that happens, it's like, how the fuck has that been going on and no one's even mentioned it?
Yeah.
And it is like the thing of like, because it's so common, if you say, what the fuck are you doing? Then you're, you know, you're a twat or whatever. You know what I mean? You're like a stuck up. It's just crazy. And it is like shining a light on it does just allow, like you hear that those people on the tube, don't you, who are like, you know, will go and ask a girl her name or whatever if someone's being harassing them. It's just like little things like that make such a massive impact in allowing people to live sort of happy, safe, healthy lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I think it's so important that you're talking about what happened to you, because people just don't know, and or still feel like you said, they still feel like they don't know how to talk about it, or they still feel they shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, and it was because I didn't know any of those stats going in. You know, like. Because literally, I set off just about a stand-up comedy show, and I do write autobiographical shows, and I was in therapy about it, and I was dealing with it, and like, you know, I'd not been in a sexual relationship, but I was starting to try to date, and I was living in this squat, and so all the impacts of the abuse I was talking about, and it felt just like, it felt mad, like the fact I'd not been in a sexual relationship until I was 25, and without the abuse, that's so weird. You know, you'd have to sort of make it. I'd have to make a lie up to why that was. So that. So the decision to talk about the abuse was mainly a comedic, artistic choice to go, without this context, I don't make sense to the audience.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't in any way political. It was just telling funny anecdotes, telling funny stories, and as the context being the abuse, and it went really well. And then it was only when I delved into it and found out, you know, it takes people 22 years to talk about it. It could be as high as 1 in 6 people are sexually abused as children. But then I was like, holy fuck, like, there's an actual importance to this that needs to be discussed, because we're just completely ignoring it as a society because it freaks us out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's obviously the most awful thing in the world that some people do that to children. But they do. And it's like, and us being disgusted by it isn't going to change anything. Or us every like 3 years calling someone a monster on the front page of the Sun and then doing fuck all else isn't going to like do anything.
No, this is why we need to talk to children at a young age.
I think so.
And I know people don't want to. I've said this before. It seems quite extreme to have to talk to innocent kids about potentially what they should and shouldn't do to other human beings.
Yeah.
You know, I did a panel thing and they said, and they were going, like, someone was going like, yeah, but we can't tell human beings, we can't tell children not to kill people. And I went, well, no, we have to. We're going to have to, because the stats tell you that needs to happen. You need to actually physically tell people not to murder and molest other people.
100%.
And it's a shame. It's a shame, but...
It is, and there's this idea of, like, childhood should be innocent and remain, and knowledge will, you know, make children less innocent. But actually, like, the lack of knowledge and the abuse that is systemic and happening is obviously so much worse.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, inform them and educate them. And I guess things like saying, if this ever happens to you, you can tell me as a parent. You know what I mean? I had a very loving relationship with my family, and still do, and yet somehow I still felt unable to tell them. So, like, you know, and you obviously don't tell them in a way that freaks the kid out, because that'd be mental. But finding a way to say to your kid, if anything like this ever happens, I 100% want you to tell me.
Yeah.
Well, is clearly so important. And yet, because we don't want our children to think this could happen to them, we just never give them the tool somehow.
Yeah. Well, I think this show is so important, and I think well fucking done, mate, for having the courage, man, to do
Cheers.
It.
Cheers. Yeah, thanks very much.
And I think it's going to be great. When does the tour start?
It's in Leicester on Saturday the 12th of Feb, and then like March to April, basically. So I've got tickets on my website, johnnypelham.com. And the website is a terrible website. I got it designed for like 70 quid, and can tell. You know what I mean? Like some comics have these flashy... My website is not good, but get past the shitness of the website. There's links that work, and it's sort of all around the country, really.
Brilliant. I'm sure it's going to be great, and I'm going to try and catch it if I can. I'd love to see it, man.
It'd be great.
But this has been so great. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And where can we find you on the socials?
I think I'm JohnnyPelham22 on Twitter.
Yep.
And then I think I'm Johnny_Pelham on Instagram.
Yeah.
But if that's wrong, that could be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm trying Instagram at the moment because for the tour, I'm just shit at it. Anyway, I'm trying to get better.
Yeah. I think, this is it. We didn't get into this for that, do we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm never like watching the news and think, oh, I'll do a pithy tweet to undermine Boris Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, it's never. But anyway, I'm trying to learn because it'd be good to get people to the tour.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, this is it, Johnny. Well, listen, man, thanks for talking to us.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks really so much for having us on. It's been a real pleasure. Insane in the membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.